This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
I think both Labour and the Conservatives, for rather different reasons, you know, haven't delivered what the British public want. And the British public at the minute are showing signs of, well, if they're not delivering what we want, we will go elsewhere.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the 100th edition of the Kent Politics Podcast. It's another bite-sized edition this week, bringing you a snapshot of the highlights of what's been going on in the county over the past 7 days. I'm Nikki White, Senior News Editor at the KM Media Group, and I'll be wrapping up what's caught the eye of local democracy reporters Simon Finlay, Robert Boddy and Dan Essen, as well as what's been happening with our MPs. And we start with some sad news. The longtime former leader of Ashford Borough Council, Gerry Clarkson, passed away this week. Mr. Clarkson represented Churring on that authority from 2006 until 2023 and served as leader from 2013 until the end of his term. Ahead of the 2023 elections, the longtime Tory had told us that it would be ridiculous for him to stand again, given that he was already 84 years old. Former colleagues have paid tribute to him, including former Tory MP for Ashford Damien Green, who described Mr. Clarkson as a great friend, a great family man, and a great servant to Ashford over many years. Before serving his area on the council, Mr. Clarkson had been with the London Fire Brigade for 30 years, four of which, from 1987 to 1991, he spent as Commissioner of the London Fire Service. After retiring from there, he ran his own business for a decade and also served 2 4-year terms on the Kent Police Authority, the organisation which we now know as the Office of the Kent Police and Crime Commissioner. Obviously, our thoughts are with his friends and family. And now again to the rise of reform. After we had three councillors in Kent join the party last week, a politics expert at the University of Kent has told us that voting patterns are showing that people are unwilling to vote for the two traditional choices of Tory and Labour and are, at the moment, looking elsewhere. The latest YouGov voting intention tracker puts reform slightly ahead of Labour, but Ben Side said it's not just reform who are reaping the benefits of dissatisfied voters. Here he is.
One of the things we've noticed fairly recently at elections is that the public's willingness to vote for the two traditional big beasts of the political scene in Britain, Labour and the Conservatives, has declined. So at the last election in 2024, the combined Labour-Conservative share of the vote was below 60%, which is the lowest it's been in the post-war period. So clearly people are discontent with the existing two main parties and are looking elsewhere. Whether that means, as Robert Jenrick suggests, that you know the two parties are redundant and have completely failed, I think it's probably overstating the case. I think both Labour and the Conservatives, for rather different reasons, you know, haven't delivered what the British public want. And the British public at the minute are showing signs of, well, if they're not delivering what we want, we will go elsewhere.
Is it quite unusual for a new political party, a new political movement to gain as much momentum as it has done in such a short amount, or what seems a relatively short amount of time?
Well, remember, of course, that reform is not, in a sense, a new beast. It's been around for a long time, but just in different guises. So in that sense, some of the personnel, particularly Nigel Farage, are, of course, fairly familiar beasts. In that sense, they're not a new party. I think what's interesting with reform is that clearly they have risen very sharply on the back of a single issue, notably immigration. So that's driven the party in its previous guises before, prior to Brexit, of course, in 2016. It's also driving the party now. I think what's interesting is what happens if the public concern about immigration begins to drop off. And we've seen signs that net migration into the UK is actually declining. If the public concerns about immigration begin to drop off, then what happens to people's willingness to vote for reform as predominantly a party that campaigns around a single issue?
Obviously, there is a big spotlight on reform at a local level, particularly here in Kent, and also at a national level as to what they're doing. What does this do for perhaps the slightly smaller parties like the Liberal Democrats or the Green Party, who actually did do very well at the last general election. How do they fit into all of this at the moment? How do they fit into the political landscape?
Well, I think they can be fairly confident about doing reasonably well at the next election, primarily because there does seem to be this drift away from voters supporting one of the two main parties. And at the minute in the opinion polls, clearly Labour is doing pretty badly in the polls, but the Conservatives have shown rather little sign until recently of any major uptick in support. So the beneficiaries have been not only Reform, but also the Liberal Democrats and, of course, noticeably the Greens as well. Now, whether at the next election Labour can row back and pull back some of those kind of Green voters, whether that people's intention or stated intention to vote Green will actually translate into more Green seats at the next election, that, of course, is one of the questions around our electoral system. But certainly at the minute, I don't think it's only Reform that should be confident. It's also the leader of the minor parties.
Certainly no one can say at the moment that politics is at all boring. I mean, you must love your job right now, looking at what's going on. I mean, is this the most interesting British politics has been for a while, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not difficult at all to generate debates amongst students about what's going on. Personally, I find the difficult thing around this is when people look to me for answers. And, we're in a period of real flux, real confusion. And it's actually very, very difficult, even for people that study politics for a living, to actually put your finger on things and say, this is what's going to happen. You know, the future is very much up in the air at the minute. So it's fascinating, but very difficult to predict with any degree of certainty.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Over at County Hall this week, Kent County Council is looking to prune costs in every corner of the authority, and it's doing so quite literally. In fact, plants dotted across its vast estate look set to be removed to make an annual saving of around £40,000. It's one area of spending that KCC feels is simply too much of a luxury to continue. Last week's Policy and Resources Committee set out its reasons, stating, and I quote, "Continuing the contract is no longer considered a priority. Removing plants entirely will deliver a saving of £40,000 while ensuring that resources are focused on core services. This change reflects a pragmatic approach to managing costs without compromising the council's ability to provide a safe and functional working environment. Now, it might seem a lot of money to have things which basically sit in a corner or at the bottom of a staircase, but as it stands, someone is paid to water, prune, and generally tidy up the greenery, not just at Maidstone's County Hall headquarters, but across all its various buildings. Ashford councillor, Councillor Dean Burns, who works as a tree specialist, said the cost to look after plants in KCC buildings was crazy and joked, it's not as if we're a vineyard. This view was supported by Councillor Brian Collins, one of the principal architects of the draft budget, who said later that he felt £40,000 was a lot of money to pay for plants, and that is why it's being looked at. Now, there would be some consideration given to the mental health benefits of having some greenery in municipal buildings, but it does appear there is a greater urge to make the decision to remove them. Now, as part of the Reform UK's administration's first draft budget, the leadership has identified other areas where it can save or generate money. The authority believes it can generate £1 million by conducting a review of the car parks it owns, but we haven't learnt yet how that might work, and there was little detail in the papers to support it, so we can only speculate how those assets can be turned into income. The council is also converting its chilled water supply away from bottled to plumbed supplies to staff and visitors. This is because the cost across the estate is currently £120,000, but it is anticipated the review could cut £30,000 from the bill. The paper said, and I quote again, the proposed change will reduce reliance on bottled water and increase the use of plumb systems where feasible, ensuring a more cost-effective and environmentally responsible solution. The key risks associated with this saving include the potential that some sites with older plumbing may not be suitable for plumbed water installations. So people visiting County Hall will have already seen that the old big blue bottles sitting on top of water coolers have been replaced by smaller plumbed-in dispensers. There have been no arguments about that, not least from the guys who have to lug these bottles in and out of the building. As you might expect, Green Party group leader Councillor Mark Hood welcomed the reduced use of plastic bottles. As for making money from the car parks, the Policy and Resources papers said, a review of car parking provision supports the council's wider financial strategy and ensures that resources are used responsibly. Clear communication and engagement with staff will be essential as the review progresses. KCC will also look for services that are based in the same buildings so those spaces can be freed up and sold. The paper said, where possible, there would be some co-location of services into buildings to release others, and options for disposal will always consider alternative use for KCC initially. All in all, while one can understand people mourning the loss of their office plants, one has to at least give credit to the authority for taking sensible decisions to reduce non-essential spending. In Medway, the conclusion to a long-running issue has finally come. A judicial review brought against Medway Council's decision to give planning permission to Peel Waters for their Basin 3 business campus at Chatham Docks has decided the authority did act lawfully. The judgment, which was published on January the 13th after the hearings took place in October last year, rejected three suggestions of how Medway Council's planning committee had got the decision wrong and applied for another judicial review on a fourth point, but this was also found rejected. The legal challenge was brought by ArcelorMittal Kent Wire, one of the businesses on the Chatham Dock site, and was heard in October last year. The crux of their argument was that permission had been granted for office space, which had not been part of the application, and that planning officers had misled councillors about the level of control over future development of the site. However, the High Court disagreed with the characterisation made and said the authority had granted the permission properly and legally. Judge Sir Michael Chamberlain said his job was not to assess whether approval was the right decision, in the sense of being good or bad for the area, just whether the decision had been made in full compliance with the law. He decided that it had. This outcome was likely predicted by ArcelorMittal Kent Wire, as just before Christmas they confirmed that redundancies were being consulted upon for all workers. And Kent Online understands most of those have been made redundant and only a skeleton staff remains until the site's complete closure. This week, ministers began consulting on whether or not to bring in an Australian-style social media ban for under-16s in the UK. The three-month consultation will look at numerous options, including raising the digital age of consent, overnight curfews, and restricting potentially addictive app design features such as infinite scrolling. This week, the Lords backed an amendment to the Children's Wellbeing and Schools Bill, which would insist that social media companies stop children under 16 from using their platforms within a year of the bill being passed. The proposal is now back with MPs for their consideration. A social media ban for under-16s came into force in Australia in December, and the government will be looking at how that's working, as well as asking parents here what they would like to see. Ashford Sojan Joseph worked in mental health services for many years before becoming an MP, and he's in favour of the ban. Here he tells us why.
With my background, working in the mental health for 22 years, I have seen a huge spike in mental health issues among young people. I was working in the mental health services until the day I got elected. And in the last 10, 15 years, the number of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation among young people has increased significantly. I have had contacts from many parents in my constituency saying the social media has a huge impact on young people, so they're calling for me to support their campaign. I have specifically a couple of schools in my constituency, like John Wally School, who has been put some the banning of smartphone while children are at school, has also expressed that significant improvement in children's ability to socialize while they're in the school. So that was a really good evidence-based call from the schools. Recently, I hosted a show in Parliament performed by the Generation Former from Kent. It was performed by young people explaining about their experiences of what the smartphone and social media has done to them. So there were many reasons why I supported this call from my Labour MPs. This was a recent development. I have been working on this from before. I have even written an article a year ago about how smartphones can impact on children.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it from me this week. Don't forget to join us next week for our first bumper edition of the year. I'm away, but Simon, Dan and Robert will be here and joined by our first guests of the year. In the meantime, don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage, and you can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.